Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Chris Voss Rothmeyer. Welcome, Chris. I'm so happy to have you with me.
Thank you. Good to be here.
As you may know, we begin at the beginning, and it's important for us to know, where were you born?
I was born in Ithaca, New York.
How many siblings did you have, and where do you fit in the family?
I have one sibling. My brother is 2 years older than I am, so I am the youngest of two.
And is Ithaca a home area, or what were your parents doing there?
My father was a professor at Cornell University, and that's why I was born there. He was doing research there. My family is not from there. I haven't spent any time there since I was 3 years old. I've done a lot of moving around.
So where was next?
Well, how much time did you have? Got?
Give me a quick rundown of some of the places during your growing up years.
I grew up in different places. My dad continued to work for different colleges and universities, Hanover, New Hampshire, where Dartmouth College is, and then Pitt in Pittsburgh. And we lived there for a time. And then in Massachusetts, where he worked at a general hospital there. Then my parents were divorced in 76, and my mother and brother and I moved out to Wisconsin to be with my grandparents. And that's really where my family is from. And I did stay there from about sixth grade till finishing college.
Did you go to public school?
All the years I was in school, I went to public schools.
I want to talk about your junior high and high school years. Were you involved in any sports, or were you into other kinds of things?
I was into other kinds of things. I'm not really a big sports person. I did do tennis in high school, but I wasn't very good at it, I have to say. And middle school, you know, when I was in middle school, I would never have imagined in a million years that I would one day be a middle school teacher. That never entered my mindset. And here I am now for 15 years having taught middle school. But in middle school, I wasn't involved with much. Boy Scouts, I did that outside of school. But then in high school, not much in freshman, not much in sophomore, not much in junior. In senior high school, though, as a senior high school, I did everything. I wanted to make up for lost time. So I was the yearbook editor. I was in tennis, swing choir, jazz band, choir, regular band, and in the school play. I just decided to do it all in one year.
What instrument did you play?
A couple. I played the saxophone, regular alto sax, and then baritone sax, and clarinet.
Where did that interest come from? Is your family a musical family, or?
Yes. My father, actually, I have vivid memories living in the household of my father playing the accordion. We come from German stock, and Dad loved he played it with gusto. He would put on his white shirt with purple polka dots and big lapels in the 1970s, and he would just wail on the accordion and he would play polka music around the house. That's kind of what I grew up with, that and Richard Wagner. But Dad was very much into music. In fact, when we had kids, Dad would request that we call him Grandpa Music. So
did your father remain a part of your life even after your parents divorced?
Yes, peripherally, but not a lot. He stayed on the East Coast, and then my brother and mother and I moved to Wisconsin, where we stayed. And I would visit him for 4 or 5 weeks in the summertime and then come back to Wisconsin. So, yes, he was a part, but not a big part.
Tell me about the senior play that you were in.
Godspell. It was phenomenal. I played the part of John the Baptist, and I'm the one who starts out singing, "Prepare ye the way of the Lord."
Give us a little sample.
Prepare ye the way of the Lord. So I started out the play that way, and I had never really been in a play before then, but I loved it. It was fun.
So being in front of people was cool?
I was okay with it. I mean, I got into college. I began as a computer science major. Thought I would follow in my father's footsteps. He did computers, but it just wasn't me. And so I went into communication arts. Public speaking was my concentration. And it's something that prepares you for nothing and everything at the same time. But with a little Carmarts Bachelor of Arts, I have gone a long way with it. I think it was the best thing for me.
Well, I just have to say that I used to be in radio, and I had a program called The Best from Broadway, and I absolutely love Godspell. So, wow, I'm so impressed. I can't tell you.
It was a phenomenal, and we did it really well. We had a concentration of really good guitar, musician, and a backup band, and a lot of talent. It was a very fun play to be in.
So at that point, well, you already said when you went to college, you had an idea, but where did you go to college?
University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Because?
It was close to home. It was 70 miles away from Waterford, Wisconsin, where I went to high school. And it's a good school. Just a few people from my high school went to that college, but I just felt like it was the right place for me. I don't regret it at all.
So as you were getting your interesting major, did you have any idea in the world what you might do with that? You were going to become rich by doing what?
I have, this might kind of sound strange, but I have no desire whatsoever to be rich and wealthy. Never did. I'm kind of the odd sheep in the family. I don't really, if I could live a life without money, I would. But I thought with my public speaking, I actually thought about going into the ministry when I was a senior in high school. I had made the switch in my junior year, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do with public speaking, but in my senior year, I thought, the pastorate, that'll work. I was very involved with Christian fellowship groups in college. I lived in a church, actually, that had dormitories for college students, and even at the time in the 80s, the mid-80s, they were very involved with the sanctuary movement of people from Guatemala and Honduras, Nicaragua, who were escaping a lot of the violence from there. And our church was actually a place where they could find sanctuary because they were escaping and then couldn't be arrested. They were in this country illegally. So there I was in college living right next to people whose lives they escaped great danger. And it actually changed my thinking about what I might be doing with my life.
I have several questions, but let's start with, did you learn some Spanish as you were kind of cohabitating with these folks?
Yes, but sadly, I'm still not fluent, which I still would like to change. This summer, I'm going to spend a month in Mexico to go to a language school, and I hope to become fluent. But I have been trying over the last 35 years.
What church were you affiliated with as you were growing up? Tell me a bit about that growing up in church story.
I wish I could. There's not much to tell. I didn't go to church when I was a kid. Didn't do church at all. My parents were mad at the church. So I did not go to church until we moved out to Wisconsin. And I guess my mom was looking for a church. She wanted to get her 12-year-old son and 14-year-old son into a church. My brother decided to go with my grandparents, who are involved in the Lutheran tradition. And mom and I, we went to a UCC Congregational Church, where she, as fate would have it, fell in love with the pastor. And in those days, you could actually fall in love with the pastor and it was okay. It wouldn't happen that way now. But she married the pastor and he became my stepfather. And it was a wonderful relationship. In college, this church I lived in college was an Episcopalian church. And that was another beautiful experience for me. I loved the Episcopalian way of doing things and worship and the smells and the bells. It was wonderful. And then I thought, okay, I'm going to go to seminary at an Episcopalian seminary. I spent about 5 years between college and then eventually going to seminary. But in that intervening time, I decided on a Presbyterian seminary. And so I eventually went to that. I was still a member of the Episcopalian church when I started at this Presbyterian seminary in San Francisco. And it wasn't until deep into my first year of seminary that I decided, okay, maybe I'll be a Presbyterian instead. But I'll also let you know, in that five-year intervening time between college and going into seminary, I did a lot of volunteer work with the Church of the Brethren Volunteer Service, BVS, in D.C.
How did you learn about them?
So I attended an orientation in Chicago. I didn't know about BVS until I was looking at different opportunities, and one that really jumped out at me was living in a shelter in D.C., and it happened to be through Brethren Volunteer Service. So I decided, that sounds great. So I was under the Brethren Volunteer Service auspices, I guess, as I volunteered with them. But during that year, I went to my first Mennonite church. And I actually attended for quite a while, even though I was kind of I was working with the Church of the Brethren, I attended a Mennonite church. That was the first year out of college. The second year was in Texas. I worked with a Habitat for Humanity affiliate down there, and I attended two Mennonite churches, both of them in San Antonio. One was a Spanish-speaking congregation. The other was much like PMC. It's amazing how much like PMC the church that I attended in San Antonio was. But that was my introduction to different varieties. Mennonites are as diverse as anybody is, and that was my first introduction to Mennonites.
You are so ecumenical. I'm just kind of blown away.
You know, I think it's a God thing. I don't know if I necessarily would have chosen it, but just pathways have led to where they went.
It sounds like at some point you thought seminary was a good next step. Was it kind of all of this that was happening that led you there, or was there like one or two specific things that you thought, oh, wow, maybe that's a good next step? Or
I think my stepfather had a big influence on my deciding to go into seminary. Now, understand, in high school, I was confirmed. In the United Church of Christ, there's a confirmation process, and my faith really took off at that point. I loved studying scripture. I loved being involved in the church. I was in the youth group. I was in the choir. I just really loved being involved with church. And so I started to kind of think, man, maybe church is where my life journey is going to lead me. And so was I thinking about that as I chose a degree in public speaking? Yes. Was I thinking that as I was doing volunteer work in homeless shelters and with Habitat for Humanity? Yes. I think it was all percolating there. One other year that I spent, 2 years actually, between college and seminary, was at Holden Village, a Lutheran. I'm kind of laughing at that as I'm telling you, because, you know, I really did spend a lot of different times with a lot of different denominations. A Lutheran retreat center up in Washington, in Chelan, Washington, Holden Village. I spent 2 years there, met Susan there, who's Lutheran. So, you know, I really think that the richness of the Christian tradition in its all of its varieties is really wonderful.
And not only that, but you're wandering all over the country too.
Yeah, so San Antonio was with Habitat. I also did a little bit of time with Habitat for Humanity up in Baltimore, and then moved out to Chelan for a couple of years before then attending seminary in California at San Anselmo in San Francisco.
And how did you pick that one?
It impressed me. It was a solid seminary with a strong academic focus and a strong spiritual focus. And the admission director was very attentive, was very friendly, was very inviting. Speaks largely for the importance of a good admission director.
How long was that program?
4 years. So 3 years of academic study. You get 2 years. You get your freshman and your what's called your middler year. You get 2 years of seminary education, largely with lots of theology, biblical studies, Greek and Hebrew, that kind of thing. And then your third year is your internship year. Susan and I, that was the year that we were in the Philippines. So I applied and spent my internship year in a couple of different places in the Philippines, beginning in Manila and different other parts. But that's the Philippine connection. And then I came back and did my final year at San Francisco Theological Seminary in San Francisco, rounding out the fourth year.
And by the time you were done, I mean, I'm sure there were probably some other ideas in between, but were you thinking that you were going to go into the pastorate at that point, or what were you going to do with this new degree?
Oh, yeah. There's very strong focus as you finish up in seminary to enter the parish pastorate. So I did.
Susan, which denomination? I'm so confused now, I don't even have a clue which one you might have gone into.
My apologies.
No, it's fine. I'm so impressed.
It's a Presbyterian seminary, and I did eventually enter the Presbyterian church. So I am an ordained Presbyterian pastor. Served my first church in St. Louis because Susan's turn was then to go to graduate school, and she went to George Washington University to the social work school, George Warren Brown. And that brought us to St. Louis, and I found my first pastorate there in an inner city church of St. Louis. And I had then a yoked church with another church in South St. Louis. And that was about a That was about a 3-year long together stint. So then Susan and I looked at the map again and thought, well, we'd like to be on the West Coast. Something just was calling us to the West Coast because her family lives out here, but she didn't want to live too close to the family who live in Davis, California. I found this church in Milwaukee, Oregon, and I was there for 5 years as the youth pastor and Christian ed director. And then after 5 years there, I loved working with youth. I love still working with youth and young adults. But something about the pastorate that many people may know, but it's very sedentary and solitary work. And I'm not a sedentary and solitary kind of person. I'm somebody who likes to be out and around. So I looked at teaching, very much the same ministry. I consider myself still a minister in a ministry. I just don't do it with so many words.
Would you consider yourself an extrovert?
Yes, I do consider myself an extrovert.
Mm-hmm. I ask because I've discovered that there are several pastors, at least in our church, who are introverts, and I always find that really interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think you need to be. You need to be able to spend hours and hours in study and in meetings. And I think that you need to be able to kind of think introspectively. It's required for the ministry, and kind of think about things prayerfully. I hope to do that still, but I also need time in a class with a lot of people. I guess that's what I need more than in an office thinking and reading and pondering.
Did you have teaching credentials? Tell me about becoming a middle school teacher. How did that work?
Yeah, so I was in the parish ministry for 8 years, and then I made an application to go to different schools in the area. I actually tried to apply to some of the private schools in the area without the credential, but I was finding a lot of closed doors. So I applied to different schools. Portland State became my school. They accepted me in their teaching program, and then I got a master's in education at Portland State. So that was in 2006. And then in 2007, I found myself at Barlow High School in Gresham, in the Gresham-Barlow School District. Kind of funny story about how I got that job. The summer that I was looking for work, my wife and I were going up with Henry. We didn't have Ellie at the time, but we decided to go up to Holden just to kind of, after a long, sloggy, school's hard. So I just wanted to kind of let loose and go up to Holden Village where I rejuvenate. There's lots of mountains there, and I love climbing mountains and enjoying the beauty of the expanse looking abroad. And while we were there, the thing you got to know about Holden is it's very isolated. At the time, you couldn't call in there. You couldn't access Holden at all. Well, the only way that the outside world can communicate with you is by putting a note in a pouch at the boat landing. It goes up Lake Chelan in a bus up to the lake. It takes about 2 days for a message to get up there. It did at the time in the early, in 2007. Well, the note that I got from the Gresham-Barlow School District as I had sent out resumes before going up there was, we'd like to interview you. Well, okay, I had a choice. I could go out and be away from my family for 4 days, or I could take several cell phones and climb a mountain. So I decided I'm going to choose option B. I'm going to take a Verizon phone. I'm going to take a cellular one. I'm going to take different phones, and I'm going to take a group of people. You got to start out at 5 o'clock in the morning, climb up the mountain, get up to a height where you can catch the ether sphere and cell phones. The interview was at 2 o'clock. I had gotten to a point at about 1:30 where I started to see one bar on my phone. And then I got up to about 8,500 feet and two bars. So I called the school at that point, Barlow High School, and I said, I'm here for the interview. I got there just in time. And they said, okay, are you in a safe place? And I was sitting on a rock overviewing this vast expanse of the Cascade Range at 8,500 feet, interviewing for my first job with Gresham-Barlow School District. And I think my last words with that interview were, I would climb mountains to get this job. So the rest is history. I've been working for the Gresham-Barlow School District ever since.
And the person that you were talking to was aware of your situation, that you could lose cell power at any time and that kind of thing?
True. So, yes, the principal over at Barlow High School knew that I was way up in the air, and I could lose power, I could lose a transmitter, I could lose contact. But we made it all the way through the half-hour interview.
So how soon did you find out that you actually got the job? Because, again, communication where you were. I'm assuming it took a little time for them to make this decision, or did he tell you at the end of the interview you had the job?
No. So I didn't find out for a couple more days. I finished the interview. They said, okay, we'll let you know. Okay. And then
you went down the mountain.
Went down the mountain, and a couple days later, I got that note in the pouch that said, we'd like to hire you.
So what grades are you teaching?
I began in high school. I started teaching at high school level in my first year, and then I was reduced in force from the high school as they were reducing their staff. And the principal at that school found me a position at the current middle school where I am now, and that's 14 years ago. And I've been teaching there ever since, and I've taught 6th, 7th, and 8th. Grades ever since.
And what subjects?
I get to teach social studies. I am lucky enough to teach social studies.
Tell me what is so cool about teaching kids the age that you're teaching, 6th, 7th, and 8th grades.
Yeah, understand also that in the year that I was hired, I thought I'd be here for 1 year.
Because?
Because I had not worked much with middle schoolers. I had mainly worked with high schoolers. That's where my awareness was. That's where my experience was. But these middle schoolers got a hold of me, and they're really a wonderful group of people. Much maligned, I tell people I teach middle school. I've been doing it for the last 14 years, and the typical response is, wow, thank you for doing that. Better you than me. So,
amen. I would just add my feeling right there with it.
You know, I think you got to have a personality. You got to have a mindset. You got to have a sense of humor. You got to be slightly immature to be able to work with middle schoolers. And I am all of that. So I guess I fit in.
And how has it been during the pandemic?
Yeah, so this has been tough for kids, definitely for kids. Being at home, isolated, we don't even have a vaccine for them. So there's really no, where's the end game for them? But many of them live in houses that are chaotic. Many of them have no rooms, might not even have a desk. So it's really hard for kids right now. For teachers, this is the hardest I've ever worked in my life. And I've worked in the ministry, and I've worked in education. To say that I have never worked harder in my life, that's saying something. You know, in the first semester of this year, I worked through the weekends to come up with a curriculum that we were paving brand new, coming up with a curriculum that you could present online. I'd never presented a curriculum that was all online before. We were basically creating new curriculum as we were working through first semester. The second semester, there's been some possibility for repeating. But I said to my kids today, one of the hardest things about teaching online, kids don't like to have their cameras on. And the hardest thing is teaching to pictures of kids, which don't respond very much, just pictures of people without seeing their eyes, without connecting with them. And so much of teaching is connecting with humans, building that relationship. And it's so hard to do online.
There's nothing you can do about it if they don't want their cameras on. Is that correct?
Well, we're not requiring it in the Gresham-Barlow district because some kids do live in chaotic situations. It would be distracting for the rest of the class if they were required to have their camera on, A. But B, it might be embarrassing for the kid to have other people see their living conditions. Some of those kids live in some very difficult living conditions. So we don't require it. We hope kids do turn their cameras on. But probably in a class of 15, 16, and that's a small number. Typically, I'll teach a class of 35 to 40. But this year, I might have 2 or 3 kids that have their cameras on of that many.
And what is the demographic makeup of your students, would you say?
If we filed the paperwork and wanted to receive the government benefits, we would be a Title I school. We are well over the federal minimum for free reduced lunch. So it's a high poverty school. And right now, about 50%, 40% Hispanic, about 40% white, and Black, Asian, Pacific Islander makes up the rest of the 10%.
Well, as we're finishing up, we need to know how you got to Portland Mennonite Church.
Oh, it's a wonderful story. Susan has been attending Portland Mennonite since about 2003, while I was still pastoring at Milwaukee Presbyterian Church. She decided she did not want to be the typical pastor's wife. There was just something about that she was not enjoying. It's a hard way to be. It's hard. So she wanted to find her own church in her own right, and she found Portland Mennonite. And she has been going there ever since. Well, I was part of the Presbyterian tradition until, I'm going to say, 2015, maybe 16. And the church that I was attending after I become teacher, I was attending a Presbyterian church, but then 10 years after I was there, the church actually closed. St. Mark Presbyterian near Tryon Creek on Terwilliger closed. So I could look for another Presbyterian church, or for the first time in my time as a pastor, I could attend worship with my family. And I wanted to do that. So it was about 2015 or 16 or so that I just began attending Portland Mennonite. And I sat in the pew and I was looking on either side of me and there was my family. And it's been that way ever since. And I couldn't be happier.
Is there anything particular about our church that you like, that you find attractive, or?
Well, I feel welcomed there. I guess, no, I didn't grow up Mennonite. I'm aware and familiar with Mennonite theology, and I volunteered with Habitat for Humanity, and both site coordinators were Mennonites. So I gotten to know Mennonites are very kind of hands-on, hammer to the nail people. It was a good experience for me, but I have felt welcomed there, even though I'm not Mennonite. I have felt very welcomed, and I feel like the Mennonite Church, Portland Mennonite, is very socially conscious. It's very spiritually vibrant. It loves children, and it has just a passion and a heart for honest and worship with integrity.
Wow. There's so much more life there that we could explore, but we're out of time, as always. Thank you, Chris, so, so much for taking the time to share some of your amazing story with us.
Well, I am so thankful. I thank God for whatever I have experienced and whatever else I will, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about it.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.